The market average of closing deals is around less than 10%. Boozing right now has more than 30%. That means if I give 10 leads to my agent, they will close 3. Real information online, people will steal your pictures and people will know which landlord is that and then call that landlord and take your property. I think Shark Tank was one of the good things that happened to Boozing. And that's why it's called a Shark Tank. Mm-hmm. It's not called a goldfish tank or something. It's good pitching. They grill you, but that's the grill you need to be prepared for the market. Hey, you should go abroad and have that and you will have the mindset. I never had that. Oh. I never went abroad, right? So okay. When you don't know your product and you're still selling it, That's quite sad, you know?
Welcome to Vietnam Rising Podcast, where we chase dreams and opportunities in Vietnam and also get real with challenges and reality. On this season of Vietnam Rising, I'm your host, Minh Tâm, and you and I, we will sit down with the shakers and movers in Vietnam to hear about their real stories and why Vietnam is still the place to be.
Hi guys, my name is Akshay. I'm co-founder and CTO of Boozing. Boozing is a real estate platform and I've been here for 7 years in Vietnam, 5 years in Boozing. I'm excited to join Vietnam Rising.
So how's your week? It's been since the weekend already, Saturday. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I think it's a rush. A lot of things. Like, We have sprints, and so 2 weeks sprint.
You feel good that we didn't do this in the afternoon?
Yeah, very
afternoon.
Happy. Yeah. You would never get anything like this in a weekday.
Yeah.
I think that Friday is a day that you can, you know, like, wrap up everything on Friday.
Yeah.
And we generally have kickoff meetings for the next sprint on Friday, so Done with that. Actually, we also have a Trung Thu celebration yesterday, so it was quite like good end for the week.
Yeah.
And then today is like just see what's the result. You know, like, we're still waiting for the approval from Apple, and so yeah, so it's still a little bit
because of their update, it got rejected.
Yeah, it got rejected because of like some changes with the new iOS, and we need some permissions, and so we need to keep on submitting again and again. But That review time takes like a day or half a day.
Yeah.
So then it delays everything.
Okay.
So
which side, you know, the Epic game versus Apple, right?
Yeah.
Which side are you on?
Which side am I on? I'm on the side of the, like, I should not say because then my
my
app will be rejected. But like, I think that market monopoly should not be there.
Yeah.
And gamers and everyone have their rights. Of course, if something is competing, like if you're selling a new app store on the app store, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So that one is okay. But I think like
And 30%, that's what, and then
that's a lot.
It's a lot.
I think so, but it depends. Like, I mean, like, there need to be a mutual agreement between both the sides, and Apple need to also, like, they are doing their best.
Yeah.
Like, they are making services and they are trying to take money in a different way for those services. So I think they can relax these kind of regulations on good game companies. You know, like, people have spent. Maybe they can be
tiers.
But
that's one of the biggest.
Yeah,
cash flow.
I think the best is like tiers, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you have a new game, let's say I launch a game, maybe you can charge me 30%, right?
Yeah.
But if you have reached like a level where you have so much engagement, like so many people download it and review it and update it, and you are boasting that numbers that I have millions of billions of users,
yeah,
it's because of those game companies that are engaging and making content for your platform. So you can give them rebate, you know, like you can say, okay, for you guys, it's not 30%. It's 15, and that gives an incentive to people to bring more people, right? So I mean, like, they can reach a mutual agreement, but if they take it more corporate and legal, then I think it will be loss for everyone.
Yeah.
And we see Huawei is making their own OS. Next year they plan to launch.
Yeah. There's been a lot of court things in US for monopoly, like Facebook, Google has been, you know, being cash on that and stuff. There's been a lot of debate. Do you think there's anything happened similar to, like, you know, Rockefeller, where they have to split one company into 19 companies and stuff?
I am not sure, but
not possible, right?
Right now I think it's the opposite game, like people are still joining companies, you see WhatsApp, Instagram, and Facebook, and everyone is like coming into one, yeah. And Oculus and everyone. But I think this thing will keep on continuing until there is some big giants in the market.
Yeah.
And then we see what happened after that.
Yeah.
I cannot comment much about that. I think so.
Okay. Cool. So, what is the most exciting thing happened for you this week? Except, you know, get rejected.
That's sad. Most exciting. We finalized our plan for some months.
You launched. You said last time you update new functions on your Huzing app, right?
Yeah, we had live video. Live video is like people can see live launches of projects, uh-huh. and places like people can start buying apartments on our live stream as well.
Yeah.
And so that was something that we just did like an experiment, and we see that it's good traction.
Mm.
Like we can run live videos and we can have interactions and comments, mm-hmm. and that's something like unheard of in real estate. Mm. In a real estate app, you know.
Yeah.
Like, and we are trying it. And we're testing it.
But is this like a scheduled live video where like here at 12 p.m. you will get to see this apartment?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we have two kinds. Like we have one which is like pre-recorded. So we can do those as live streams for a certain time and then they become recently live streamed. But we also plan to have some scheduled live streams where people can join in and be announced before.
Yeah.
But it's not only about visiting apartments, but it's also about like... project launches, you know, like let's say someone launched a new project and there's 100 apartments available.
Yeah.
So we can show those apartments and people can book right away in the app. And
yeah.
So we are trying to get into that, mode as well.
So you're getting in the live stream.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was the one that we launched.
That's never unheard of in real estate, right?
So far.
Yeah,
like,
implementing live stream.
We have seen that in other things. Like we see it in e-commerce, Shopee, yeah. Tiki and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But of course, it's something that we are testing. And we have for customers already. Customers, we can still show that, and our people are showing it. But for landlords to buy is a different story.
Yeah.
And we are trying it. So that's a new function that we just recently launched. Huzing app has a lot of functions, actually.
Yeah.
We have loan estimate calculator and news and stuff like that. There's a lot of things that are related to real estate at one place.
Uh-huh.
And the UI is very easy for people.
Can you give a brief elevator pitch about Huzing?
Oh, okay. Huzing is a real estate platform. We consider ourselves a prop tech company, but it's actually like a agency that has been prepped up with a lot of tools that makes our agents quite efficient.
Mm.
And so we try to have most trustful, accessible, and hassle-free information for our stakeholders.
Mm.
Yeah. So we started this 5 years ago.
Mm.
And so far we have had thousands of deals and
every month?
No, in total. I mean, like, but tens of thousands of customers.
Yes.
And happy landlords, happy customers.
Mm-hmm.
We are trying to pioneer real estate in terms of data and information related to real estate, renting, buying for Vietnamese, for foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite a journey from going from a niche market of foreigners to going into buying and selling.
Is it because of COVID that you have to adapt into that?
We actually planned it before last year. We actually switched in October, but it's fortunate that just before COVID, we already had this new market giving us revenue, and we had built the team already. So now we have dedicated half of our team is to buying and selling, and they are doing good.
Mm-hmm.
And they have deals. We have big projects in our hands, and we are selling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
why the switch? Why do you feel like it's important to go back to the local domestic part?
Actually, we always plan that.
Mm.
We plan that we start with the niche because those market can adapt to new technology and software and platforms faster.
Yeah.
So we did that, prepared our workforce, prepared our agents, prepared the concept and systems. And stuff. So unlike other companies who use like Salesforce or any other like predefined CRM systems, we made our own CRM system that custom to Vietnamese real estate, and then data points from that. So we spent that with our niche market, which was foreigners, for 3 years, 4 years, and then we switched into buying and selling for Vietnamese, and that switch was like well accepted because we were already doing good in secondary renting. So then getting into secondary buying, all the landlords already were giving us the request. Hey, please sell my apartment. So we just had to just enable that.
Yeah.
And then primary sale was something new. And we had to have experts.
What is different between primary and secondary
sales? So secondary sales is like you already buy an apartment from someone who already owns an apartment, right? So like it's like a second sale or a third sale or a fourth sale, right? Yeah. So it's a secondary sales. Prices go up in that.
Yeah.
And the other one is like primary sales. Primary sales is directly buying from the developer. Maybe the apartments are not finished yet.
Yeah.
And you pay in advance. Uh-huh. And so when it's finished, the value already goes up.
Yeah.
So primary was something new.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, like my co-founder, he had some experience with that, but we need more experts, and so we recruited, and now we have a primary sale team, and we are doing some projects.
Yeah, I feel like so from my understanding from Vietnam, like investor in real estate, like the one who just buying to resell, a lot of them invest in primary real estate, but now because there's a lot of you know, on the side, the uncertainty in like in the side developers, right? They develop, they promise certain projects like this and that, and then like it was not executed, and everybody was upset.
Yeah.
So do you feel like people are more keen to wait till the project is completed?
I see.
Before they invest it.
Again, there's two types of people, right? People who can take that risk because they have that money, and people who would wait and see, right? So I think both of them exist in this market, and there's a lot of demand. That case that some of the projects were not completed and stuff, it happened, and that was 1 or 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And at that time, government started regulating. But that regulation is also to control the supply and demand.
Yeah.
Because of that regulation, they stopped like 40 projects. And 40 projects that were stopped and then 1 or 2 were let go, people wanted to buy. Right. Mm. So now, actually, at this point of time, I was reading an article in the newspaper as well. The demand is much more than the supply right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's okay. So now you just let go of some projects which are legal, and then the people will buy it out. And actually, the selling out is very fast. Like we are selling some projects, Prisia, New City, Grand Park, and some in Fukuok also.
Wow.
And people just want to buy it. Mm. They're waiting. They're waiting. Even in Corona times, like they're just waiting, you know. And being F1, we are F1 for some projects. F1 is like the first layer of agents.
Yeah.
We have, we see our partners also doing a lot. Like they are closing deals every day, right? And that means there's demand in the market.
Mm-hmm.
The supply, I think it's a good strategy by the government to regulate it. Because if you let open so many, then maybe it might be a little bit of messed up.
I see.
I have been hearing like, oh, the bubble will burst for like for two, 3 or 4 years.
I haven't heard that for a long time.
But it doesn't happen. You know, like it for now, I think it's still in a growth track. And I think the government realized that also. And you see that all the flyovers and everything is being finished now.
Yeah.
Like Thon Nhuc Thang and everything.
The metro.
Metro. Yeah. Everything is on full spree because, yes, the economy has suffered. And to regulate and to have the right cash flow coming in, we have to finish the infrastructure.
Yeah.
And so now the Thu Duc City is being formed and, you know, the bridges are being completed and metro is being completed. It's all to facilitate these projects and these apartments and shift. And it is estimated that 11 million people will move to Ho Chi Minh City and 9 million.
That's so much. Right now we have already 11
But because they have to expand it, right? Like they are expanding the city. Thu Duc City is also Ho Chi Minh, but they made it separately, right? And those three
districts. So Thu Duc City it was the district in Ho Chi Minh City,
nine,
right?
Thu Duc,
is 9-2-2 is it concluded in that?
I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
Nine
in Thu Duc is the district, which is kind of remote compared to the central.
Yeah.
But that's where they are projecting to have the new city or the newest developments will be there.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Metro will be there, airport will be near there, and then we have the connection to District 2, District 1. And so actually prices just shot up as soon as it was announced that it will become Thu Duc City.
Mm.
Like District 9, Grand Park prices went up.
Wow.
You know, and so this is where the primary people, they already know the city plan and then think and they bet on it. Okay, let's buy these apartments first.
Yeah.
And they did that 1 year, 2 years ago. and now they will reap benefits of that.
Mm.
Yeah, of course, you cannot make a lot, but you can actually make like 500 million or 1 billion in some years, you know, like 1 or 2 or 3 years. So it's much more interest than how banks could pay you or some other investment could pay you.
Yeah.
Right. And even if you plan to stay there, it's well connected and far. Well connected, but silent. Mm. I think that real estate investment still has a good potential for investment right now in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're still waiting seeing. I think there's a lot more projects coming in, and that also excites our team. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. So how do you get into, you know, being CTO of a real estate company, real estate startup, prop tech in Vietnam? Because real estate is a very brick and mortar and very traditional business in Vietnam, right?
Yeah.
How do you, you know, get yourself into this business?
Mm. Actually, I if you asked me 10 years ago, actually, you will be in Vietnam doing a real estate startup. Impossible. I would not know that, right?
Wait, have you been here for 10 years already?
No, 10 years I would be in university. No, I would not know that. I would not believe that also, maybe. I have been in Vietnam for 7 years now, and we started Huzing 5 years ago, 2015. At that time, I think that the things that attracted were mostly challenges, you know, like problems in the any industry is okay, but what attracted me was problems and having a solution for that, a tech solution for that. I have a major in electronics, electronics and communication, and when I see a good problem, I really want to solve it by some way or the other, right?
Yeah.
And at that time, I think I was just out of an organization called ISEC in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And I got some experience about marketing and sales and other things from that.
Yeah.
So now I had like an engineering background plus a mindset about marketing, sales and team leading.
Mm-hmm.
So I was considering what to do next. And so I did a project with Intel. And that was a good project. It was about getting people to know more about Intel Galileo, that makes smart homes and smart cars and stuff like that. We did that for 2 years almost, and then
is that for Isaac?
No, it was it's a project by Intel.
Okay.
Yeah, so being an evangelist for their products was something that I was doing. Intel Galileo, Intel Edison, these were two boards that we were making, and we were convincing people to use, like mostly university students and students, to make projects, smart homes, smart cars, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, I met many people in RMIT, Thon Duc Thanh, and other places, schools also. But then during that time, I met my co-founder in a trip, also an ISECer, ex-ISECer.
Uh-huh.
And so we were in an alumni
party
retreat.
Retreat.
We were on climbing a mountain. And he was like, hey, real estate.
Good bonding time.
Yeah, it's a good bonding. I think the whole network of ISEC alumni is quite good. Like, they have taken good roles in different companies. So you always have those ideas, brainstorming. And so he was telling me about real estate.
Uh-huh.
And in that
is he's been always
he was
been
there
in
already
state.
There 3 or 4 years already at that time, and so he had experience with being an agent and working with big companies, Novaland and Kai Hon Land and other all kind of developers as well as agencies, right? And being an agent, and he was saying that there's no real information online. You go to Badong San or any other website, and people just put random stuff and random pictures and random price, and it's still the same. You might have seen it, right?
Yeah.
People go over there only to find the phone numbers, and then they don't care what's the name because the name is not true, and they don't care the address, they don't care the picture, because it's only about, okay, District 2, this guy has, okay, hello, do you have anything in District 2? Yeah, I have. Is the one on Badong San or on this platform available? No, it's not available. Okay, so can you come and see another? Yeah, let's go. So that was the mindset. But then for foreigners, it did not work because they wanted what they see is what they get.
Yeah.
And it did not work like that. So that was a big pain point. And another was like, people were scamming a lot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, can you give me the deposit today? We will sign the contract today. This is the landlord. Mm-hmm. And you sign, and the next day the house is locked and no one's there and your deposit is gone.
Wow.
The contract has no value. Everything was fake.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was happening a lot.
Even like the paperwork, right?
Yeah,
like they show the paperwork and then like you eventually find out that my family actually got some kind of similar incident where they were like, oh, here, just, yeah, it's lucky it's a real landlord. But the problem is that they were in a Đô Thị Hóa, basically like where you're not supposed to sell and buy real estate.
Because it's
supposed to be
a natural land or
government is restricting that area because for some kind of development.
Construction, I understand. And they sold it?
Yes.
Oh,
And then
so
yeah.
Sad.
So we bought it and then and we'll have to, you know, just keep it. The purpose, the original purpose is to buy and sell.
Yeah.
But then because of that.
But this kind of thing is very difficult. We now getting into land and buying and selling, and we understand like completely like this has no documentation and so difficult.
Yeah.
You for sure need to cooperate with the planning agencies and government to get those information.
How do you recognize an authentic paperwork? Because so easy to
So for buying and selling it's a little bit difficult, so that's why we are doing mostly primary sale because it's directly from developer and secondary for big projects where we can still verify it with the local people. But like for land and nhà phố, biệt thự, we are not getting into that because it's difficult. It's quite we are trying to get some information, and I'm preparing the automatic system generated results like you can verify, but for that we still need to collect a lot of data, so we are in that process. But
wouldn't be like you know, if you got data from landlords, and you have seen the traction that's being assembled, and you would able to verify if they're you know, trustful or not.
Sure we can do that. For apartments and projects we are doing that already. We have like years of history, 5 years of history, who has rented, who has bought, because we did those transactions and we know those transactions, and other people who did that transaction is also recorded into our system, right?
Yeah.
And so actually you can see the price trend. Even if you open the Housing app now, you can go to any apartment and you can see the price trend because we know that price has changed like that. And we also have the landlord, like who bought it and sold to who.
Yeah.
So you can, in our system, the team can still see that if they want to see it. We want to do that for all the properties in Vietnam or in Ho Chi Minh City. Takes time.
Yeah.
We are acquiring some
data,
some information over time, and we are building teams.
Mm-hmm.
So we have like around 4 satellite offices for sales now.
Wow.
And they are dedicated to those districts or those areas.
Area.
How do you say?
Khu vực.
Yeah. So to that areas, you know. And we have one in District 2, one in District 1, one in Binh Thanh.
So which one is the most developing or more exciting area?
Like
right
we started
now?
District 2.
Mm-hmm.
That was the biggest one because foreigners was our... But now we have Binh Thanh.
Uh-huh.
It's also getting good result, and District 1 is also getting good result. District 1, when we had Golden River and a lot of like there was no corona, the token size was quite high because prices are quite high in District 1, renting and buying. And so District 1 is one of the good ones, but now during corona the prices have gone down and less people rent Vinhome Golden River and kind of you know like expensive apartments. And there's a setback for that, but we have now the buying team. So District 9 is kind of hot, and then New City area, District 2 area again also is quite hot. So we focusing on that.
Do you field trip, like going on being agent or something?
I like to do that, like as a tech guy. Like before I used to do a lot, nowadays because we have a lot of products that we are making, so I spend more time in the headquarters in District 1. Before I would go with Hai and other people in my team to see the projects, understand, because once you are on the ground you see more real problems, and as I said, real problems attract me to find solution. And so visiting offices helps a lot.
What was the most compelling problem that you've seen, and how do you find it?
So I think real information is first, and then real time information is another thing, right?
Uh-huh.
So how do you convince the agents to put information on the system, update it,
yeah,
and update it correctly and track it, that mm-hmm. how they're updating it. So all of that is like built in into the system. So to find that ideology.
Yeah, where's the pain point where you just convince them, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. like it need to be a merger between, as you were saying, that like a brick mortar industry is a little bit difficult to
adapt.
Completely change
yeah.
into online. You cannot do that. Some competitors try that and they're not existing today, you know.
Yeah.
It's difficult because the agents will not change,
yeah,
and the landlords also take time to change. Customers may be faster. Mm-hmm. That also you need to start with the niche and practice,
yeah,
before you get into the Vietnamese ideology of finding apartments and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And you need to observe the, like, for example, we had 360 visual of every room,
yeah,
5 years ago when I started the company. That was the core.
Uh-huh.
You know, but market was not ready, right? Mm. Like there is no 3D glasses, there is no 360 on Facebook at that time.
Yeah.
You know, but then now it's there. People can see the 360, they like it on the website, but still don't have the glasses, right?
Mm.
So we cannot get into the virtual reality kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
We have done that.
Uh-huh.
It's possible. You can come
so you,
to
wait. So you can basically
put the glasses
and book in class and look into Husing website and see it again? Wow.
Can. Because it's the same concept. It just does what left and right eyes, and
uh-huh.
then you put on the Samsung glass or any, even you can make a Google cardboard box and
yeah.
you put it on your head and you can look around in the house. We
wow.
did that. I actually did that 5 years ago as a concept.
Wow.
And we showed it in Singapore. So people were excited, but actually it's quite basic.
Uh-huh.
But market has not adopted it, right? You don't wear those glasses every day. You
yeah.
don't watch TV like that. You
yeah.
don't see advertisements like that. So a little bit more time need to be put into it.
Yeah.
I think Facebook is planning with Oculus some things, but maybe it will take 5 years for everyone to replace the TV and monitors in their house just with the glasses.
Yeah.
It will take time. But when it's there, we are ready for that. You
yeah,
know?
Absolutely. Like for my business, right? So my company, we work in technologies for logistics industry. It's also very traditional business.
Yeah.
And we've been here around like 18 years already, right? And we've seen a lot of startup come and go because everybody's like, oh, we're going to do robot, we're going to do Uber for truck or whatever,
yeah.
those things, right? And from us who being there for so long,
yeah.
we know that the customer or the user, they only ready for switching between Excels from manual to automations. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
No, like further technology needs like 7 to 10 years for
uh-huh.
just to adapt.
I see.
Yeah. So I think it's a similar case for
similar,
you, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. What we did was increase the efficiency, right? Increase the number of deals you can do with the same amount of customers.
Yeah.
You know? The market average of closing deals is around less than 10% right
yeah.
now. And Husing right now has more than 30%. That
wow.
means if I give 10 leads to my agent, they will close 3.
Wow.
So that's 3 times revenue, right? Like
mm-hmm.
if one agent makes 1,000, then in a month, my agent makes 3,000, right?
Mm.
So that's good. Good for the agent, good for the company. Yeah. And good for the number of customers we can serve, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that efficiency increasing is what we focused on,
uh-huh.
right? And it goes down to a lot of small changes. Like sometimes even the agents do not realize what is the benefit of Husing, you know? Like
yeah.
they're doing the work and they think that everything's, I did it, right?
Uh-huh.
But the thing is that how do we show the customers the right option on the website at the right time? How do we show the most available option on the top? How does the customer click it and say, I want this? And then 100% there's a chance that that apartment is available. All of this is being done by the system, right?
Yeah.
And so once that right expectation from the beginning, capturing the customer, even
yeah.
running the ads,
uh-huh.
running the ads to the right people, then capturing the customer, and then giving it to the right agent,
mm-hmm.
matching it to the right agent,
yeah.
and for the right property,
yeah.
that increases the chance,
mm.
right? After that, of course, there's customer service. Again, brick and mortar still needs face. It needs people. It needs a brand. It needs a distribution network, right?
Yeah.
And that's where the agents play a very important role. If we mess up our service, of course, that will create problems,
yeah.
right? And of course, like we do thousands of deals. Of course, there are 2, 3, 4 deals that are messed up, You know, like because of wrong expectation setting from the landlord, from the customer, maybe sometimes the agent messed up something.
Yeah.
It happens. And that's why we have leaders, and leaders handle those cases, you know. And it need to be there. It's still a physical transaction.
Yeah.
No one will buy a house online
and
get a document and then believe that it's done, you know.
Yeah.
Like they still need to go there and they need to still have that service. And for that, we also have a good operations team.
Yeah.
We have a business team, and that team is like recruiting the right people. We figured out which industry people are good. Like hospitality industry is really nice. You know, like they really care about customers. Mm-hmm. Like changing the mindset of people that real estate agents are like crows. Like what do you call it? Chim something, right? The real estate agents are compared to like the crows, the birds. Yeah, they call them a bird, right? Like always looking for opportunity to.
Oh yeah, gan.
Maybe.
Is that
something like that? Yeah.
Okay.
I don't remember. But,
okay.
But yeah, to change that mindset and then bring in that. Oh, real estate agents are consultants.
Yes.
Investment consultants. You know, because I am putting $4 billion or $3 billion in the land.
Yeah.
Am I sure that it's good investment? That's property consultation. You know, like that's like bringing that mindset. Bringing that trust, you need good people, and you need to recruit good people, right? And so
absolutely, because in real estate in Vietnam, there's I don't invest in myself, right? But from so many stories I heard, right, Asian try to scam you, the landlords try to scam you, somebody try to scam you along the way. The paperwork is not clear, not transparent. So many problems, and people still keeping it like that, right? No one try to change it.
Yeah. It's difficult. Like that's why I think that we can start with a little bit of the market, and then solve the problems in that market, learn from that, and then implement into other sectors. Mm-hmm. Like people ask us why you don't get into offices and shops and corporate places and land. It's because there are other complications there.
Yeah.
Not every place is the same problems, right?
Yep.
With land, the problem is the legacy of the land. Who owned it in the past? How do you check that?
Mm-hmm.
Exact dimension, exact corners. How do you check that? Overlap with the government plan. How do you check that? So many issues, right?
Yeah.
For houses, it's completely different. Houses is like property valuation in that street. Okay, so this street is how much?
Do they care about like history of the owner, like feng shui? You know, if business is bad there, people been there, business is bad there, they don't like it. Have you ever encountered a problem like that?
I think that's a good idea. I think that's a good idea. I think we can have a history like that.
Yeah.
So actually, we have right now more than 150 data points for every property.
Yeah.
But maybe we can add that. We have characteristics like which direction it is what kind of furnishing it has, and balcony and views, city view, pool view, stuff like that. So we do have some, certain points of data points for that property, and we associate that with a landlord also, right? So let's say you are a landlord in my system and you have four properties, so I can match what is common between your four properties, so I can know your profile as well. You know, how much you have invested and how much the investment has grown and how much rent do you collect and stuff like that. But again, all of these are confidential data. We don't use the people's personality, but what we take is like the system is able to estimate that who is probable to buy more apartments and who is probable to rent out more apartments, and we can utilize that. So over time, of course, people accumulate data, and it's important to utilize that to support more customers and more better transactions, you know, like to support those people.
Take me back to when you first, you know, hear the idea about Huzing, hear about the problem in real estate. How do you feel about it, and how do you decided to try to fix the problem?
So we got lost from that point, right? I mentioned that, and then I said just put real information online, put pictures, put 360, and just make a website like that. It's like no one does that in the market.
But how do you feel about like hearing that, you know, real estate in Vietnam is just so not transparent. Like those, you know, you would assume that real information should be there
yeah.
for everybody to see,
yeah.
but then like there's none of it.
Yeah. Exactly. Because I came from India where the market was a little bit more evolved and there were some startups that were putting real information online. Airbnb was there, but they were short term. But what I liked about Airbnb was like, it's real. Pictures are real and data is real and you book the real thing and you get that thing, right? So my only idea was like, it doesn't matter whether it's short term or rent or buying or selling, it's the same. Just put the real information online, right? But of course, it's not so simple. You put real information online, people will steal your pictures and people will know which landlord is that and then call that landlord and take your property.
Yeah.
That's what you see on the street, right? Like if some apartment house is available, they put chatwe or ban and then another agent will take the picture and then tear it. They would remove the banner because they don't want other agents or other customers to know it. And the landlord keep on putting it and then the agent come and tear it again and again.
What the heck?
Yeah. And
below. So many numbers on the-
and they put their own numbers because...
That's so weird. Like, that's like, I want your commission, but I won't ask for your permissions. I'm just going to come and take it.
Yeah. And then they will call you. I have a customer for you. Do you want it? So that's the mindset, you know? And so it's very difficult... So when I say that just put real information, what I get back from my co-founder is like, it works like this. And then we have to sit down and think more ideas, you know? And of course, we did that. And
how do you feel when you hear that? Like, that's the thing. How do you know? Because I'm just like, whoa, that's really weird.
I actually feel excited because that's a challenge, right? Like, how do you solve it?
Yeah.
How do you solve with some solution, like operational solution or tech solution or mixed solution, right?
Yeah.
So in the beginning, everything was like, from my side was tech. But my co-founder helped me to ground down those ideas because, hey, tech can be cheated over here or this problem can happen.
Yeah.
So it's not always about that the tech can solve the problem. And that... mutual discussion helped us to make a lot of decisions in the beginning, right? And we tested it with our agents. And then those agents found loopholes. Hey, I can still do this, you know? And so that's how we perfected it, right? Like, so in the beginning, we only had 4 or 5 agents. Now we have like more than 60, 70 agents, you know?
Yeah.
And managing those agents, and I cannot 100% say that all of them are doing it correctly also right now. There might be some loopholes, but I can track that. I can view that and we can make decisions on that. And over time, system gets better, operations get better, and data security and everything gets better. We have to make decisions like that. And I think that that's the entertaining part.
Mm.
Yeah. It's not that... I think I would get bored if I had to just replicate something. I'll copy, paste this thing. I would really get bored. But...
it's the constant revolving of like learning and then perfecting it and then like try to make another solutions to solve the problems.
Yes.
Testing it out.
Yeah.
See the result.
And also not getting lost with... I think the best thing that I have learned in the last 5 years is like not getting lost with innovation, you know.
Really?
Don't get lost with that. Like don't go like, let's innovate because unregulated innovation is waste of money, right? And it's a waste of talent, of people also. So what I learned is like you can control, you have the idea, you can keep it.
Yeah.
You can prepare things for the future. Like for example, we do collect a lot of behavioral data for customers and landlords, and from that our team is learning and our system is learning, like how landlords interact, how customers interact with our system, with our app, and that helps us to, you know, like create more data to analyze. So next time, let's say in 6 months or 1 year, you come and write 2-bedroom apartment, I would know what are you going to close the deal with based on my past records and data, you know? So, but again, I don't need to focus on it now. I don't need to implement it now. What I can do is just start collecting data, right?
Yeah.
And so that's the thing that we are doing. Like, we know this is the potential. As I said, the 361, I know that the glasses are there, but if I start promoting it now on Facebook and showing it people, it doesn't make sense because landlords don't care. Customers don't care.
Yeah.
They care about good apartment, good deal and good timing. So you focus on that, you optimize.
Was there any particular solutions that you were so very passionate about, but then when it came out nobody really cared about?
I think it's not about like they don't care about at that time. But the thing is that it fades out, right?
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So like you make a function, people use it, and then they forget it.
Oh,
because maybe the direction of the company or the direction of the execution is changed.
Oh.
Right? So it sometimes happens. Like, for example, like we had referral codes, you know, for agents to able to refer, external agents to refer to our internal agents.
Yeah.
And we wanted it to be incentivized. So we had a system to incentivize it. But then later we thought that we don't need to incentivize. It's just that they can put the code and then the lead directly go to our internal agent. So external agents can talk to our team and then we can give the leads to them. And so we remove the incentive system. And
why would the external agent give you the lead then?
They have incentive, I mean like internal incentive system.
Oh,
we removed it. Another was like, let's say the agent app, we made it and we plan to grow that a lot.
Yeah.
But we realized that for now, we don't need to grow it a lot. What it has achieved already, like external agents can give their leads to us, is okay. So we had an internal team and then we had to disperse that internal team into another team. And we started not focusing on those aspects, right? So the product is there, but that product become more of like a operational tool or a marketing tool
like
to
a
get
skeleton.
More leads, right? And we don't need to grow it. Of course, I can still grow it. We have many ideas for supporting external agents.
Yeah.
But for now, we don't need it. What we need is more on the landlord side and the customer side. And so we started another app called Housing App.
Yeah.
So the agent app become a tool to get more leads, but Housing App became the sole driver of new apartments and new customers and new landlords, right? So I would say that direction changes the need, but your question that whether it was discarded or something, not it just faded out, like right? But I think that looking back 5 years and looking back at our code, we have removed a lot of things that we thought were not important. It's okay. It's good. Imagine it like a garden, right? In the garden, you have trees and you have shrubs and you have grass. Everything is growing every day, right? And someday you just need to go and trim up the shrubs. Someday you have to trim up the tree. Someday you have to trim up the grass.
Yeah.
And that trimming is needed.
Uh-huh.
So that the garden still looks beautiful and still is usable.
Growing. I see. Wow. So you talk about, you tell a lot about, solving problems. Is that something you're particularly interested in?
I think so. That's what I could dig deep down into myself, right? Like, I like solving problems, and then I also like understanding different solutions that are available, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all the time, like for example, iOS 14 just launched, but I have been testing it for 3 months already, giving feedbacks to iOS, and we already started checking what is app clips and how we can work with it. And so having that far-sightedness and then preparing, it helps a lot because you are ready for it, right? This is the first time that Apple did not give time to developers to prepare. They just launched. Tomorrow iOS 14 is available, right? So now all the apps that did not prepare will crash or will have issues, right?
Wow.
But we didn't have that because we were thinking a little bit ahead. Same for our infrastructure, like we are preparing a lot of AI ML, like AI and machine learning products. We are preparing it, and we know that it's not now. Maybe 6 months, 12 months down the lane, we will have implementations for it, but we prepare. Start collecting already.
Is that something, so solving problems, is that something that has always been to you? Like you always like doing it even when you're young? Is engineering and solving problems something that you always know that you do?
Sometimes you create your own problem, right? For example, to solve it.
Yeah.
And like, so when I was a kid, like maybe grade 10 or grade 10, we had, I learned Visual Basic. Visual Basic and...
Visual Basic is...
It's a programming language that you can use to make Windows applications.
Okay.
So sometimes you see that, you see the installation. Whenever you install something on Windows, there is a pop-up. It says click next and then agree to the term condition and install. Those forms are made in Visual Basic.
Ah.
Yeah. So you can make many things. You can make calculators, and you can make... So I made some things like airport management system and... Airport management system.
Airport, like airport?
The whole airport management, wow. How you manage the luggage, how you manage the tickets.
Wow. Well, how do you get into that? How do you...
That was because I had a...
You have a bad time at airport?
No. Because I was in university, in school. And in school, we had projects. Like you had to make railway management, airport management. So I choose one. And then when I see that, so then I understood how you can, you know, like have a relational database and how you can connect it to the front end and how you can store data in it. And that's where my foundation of software development came into. And
have you ever think of you would start up a company using those knowledge?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. But what I was doing was I was doing more product development and project management. Mm. These were two things which I was always doing in ISEC, in university, in the Intel project, and then finally in Huzing. So can consider me more like a product owner or a project management guy, like who can, you know, like build products and who can conduct make projects, right? But another aspect that you add to that is like being aware about the upcoming solutions, right? So as I said, that in the school part, right, like I saw that we have the game in the Nokia phone. It's like the snake game. You eat and you grow, right? So for me, and no one asked me to do that, but I wanted to make that game. I wanted to make it to just understand how, like, the snake can, you know, like, go one by one block. And then how does the speed increase? And how does the length increase? And
how, and why is that important for you?
Just because I wanted to know how this guy or how this person is doing. Like
how did the program was
programmer
made?
Made it, right? But at the time, I think that searching on Google and downloading source code was not so prominent. So you have to figure it out yourself, right? And I tried to make it. And then I realized that when I do a down and a right, my snake would become diagonal. And I was like,
why?
Oh, no. And that's where I run into a problem, right? In code, you always run into problem. But when I made it, I realized that this can also be a feature, right? Okay, in my snake, you can go diagonal. You do this and that, right? But then...
Innovative.
But to find the solution to that, I had to spend time and understand why did I make that mistake, why the X and Y coordinates become X, Y directly, how can I still keep X0, Y0, you know, like something like that. And in the end, the snake was good and people were very excited when they saw it, my teacher, my team members, because I went a little bit extra out of the course. Like, okay, I made my airport management, but I had time to make a game and that game worked, right? And then I ended up making more things like scientific calculator and stuff like that.
Wow.
But that was like practicing skills. But that's where I realized that, okay, problems are the ones. If that snake would have not had that problem, I would not feel excited. I feel excited only when I solve that problem and then I feel proud about that.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, I actually made this. I solved this issue, right? That was maybe like when I was a kid, 10th grade. But then... In ISEC, the same.
What's ISEC?
ISEC is a youth organization, youth mobility program, you can consider. So it's present in 110 countries and it does exchange of students from one country to another.
Yeah.
So in my university time, I joined it and it was a good experience. You learn about marketing and sales and you convince people to go abroad. It's difficult. You know, like...
I thought people always want to go abroad. Like, I don't know, in Vietnam people would love to go
abroad. But which age, right? Like, so if you're sending like university students, first year, second year, third year students, it's a little bit difficult, especially in an Indian traditional mindset, conservative mindset, that hey, send your daughter or send your son to Russia send to Brazil. It's difficult. And
I mean, Vietnam love US for you, right?
But sending for 2 months alone is a difficult thing to sell to sell to the parents, you know.
Yeah.
And what I learned from all of that experience was like, if I can convince a parent to send their daughter to Africa, I can convince anyone to do anything, you know. Yeah, because it's difficult.
Wait, what happened there? Like, how do you convince them then?
Like, you have to. Like, you know, okay.
What's in Africa that your daughter will get?
Yeah.
That you wouldn't get in India?
It's more about like the open mindset, being able to work with an international group of people, being able to work for a social project and teach people and teach kids. And 2 months she can sit home and do this, or she can go outside, push herself, fail, and, you know, stand up by herself and grow her connections between people, language, food, and social stigma and so many things. It will open up her mindset. And and can you do that? And, you know, like, parents are still hesitant, and we tell them that there is a buddy, I will be in regular contact, it's just 2 months, and this would be the cost. Yeah, so all of those factors in, and then parents still agree to send. I think that was difficult, and me doing that and convincing my team to do the same, and then the team being able to do that and reach a target is a lot of things to learn, you know, like, especially as a university student.
Absolutely.
Actually, some of the times I even sent MBA students abroad.
Wow.
And they thought that I was like 5 years or 6 years elder than them.
Uh-huh.
And I was like already done my MBA, because they felt more confident listening to my pitch in English and showing the presentation and convincing them to go abroad. But I was an undergrad at that time. And then when I tell them that, they would like lose the respect like this.
I know.
You know, but I think that's...
But then did you eventually hire age when that happened? Do you feel like you need to hire age when people start asking, how old are you?
I would rather not share that.
Same. Like for me, I start working after I graduate high school, right? And I work full time during that time. And my goal is just to make people think that I already married.
Why?
Well, not married, right? But it's like old enough to get married. And then, you know, because the way I did my makeup and stuff, people were like, you have kids, right? And stuff. And I'm like, think like that. I like it.
I keep my beard.
Yeah, there's for purpose.
Whenever we are raising fund, we will. Because if I shave off, I look 10 years younger. That's a kid. How can he raise the fund? I'm kidding. I think appearance and age, of course, like people feel more trustful.
Yeah.
I think in the end, it's more about the experience that you have.
Yeah.
When you have enough experience, it doesn't matter how you look. You can reflect that with your conversation.
Yeah.
It's okay for people.
And do you feel like Isaac has helped you to escalate all this experience?
I was a vice president in like my second year of university, and then of a local chapter, and then I came to Vietnam as a director for the whole country, and we were heading like almost 1,000 members, like 600-700 members, like, right? And we were doing facilitation and conferences and working with big partners, Unilever and Coca-Cola and everyone. Mm-hmm. So in the end, I think then Isaac shows you a lot of positions very fast. Mm-hmm. But again, people consider it as a bubble, because you are in university and you are doing exchange, and everything is like, you are seeing those positions, but inside your bubble, you are a vice president and director, but you are not outside. I think it's okay.
Yeah.
Because you can see those positions. In your life, becoming a director or actually becoming a CTO of a big company would have taken you
20 years.
20 or 30 years, right? But here you see that ladder, and then you know where you want to reach in your life, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think that an ISEC member after a good experience can become something like that. But what they can do is they can climb the ladder faster.
Yeah.
They cannot skip the step, but they can climb the step faster, right? And that's important.
And that's from, you know, self-awareness, like understanding what kind of responsibility, what kind of challenge you would face in that position, and decide if you want to do it or not, pursue it or not.
Yeah.
And then know what path you should go for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think there's many other organizations. I see in Vietnam, we have SEO, and then we have even the youth union projects are also very good. If you join a club and you are able to perform there, and you have been pushed to perform there, you already have that mindset of growth, and you have that mindset. But if you are not taking something extracurricular in your university and in your high school, it's a little bit difficult, because things will take time for you. So Isaac was a fortunate incident that happened in my life.
Uh-huh.
It took 4 or 5 years of my life during university, so it's okay.
Uh-huh.
But then I actually, if I look back now in my company, also like the top 3-4 positions are all ISECers, you know.
Wow.
Because I didn't choose them. They are
it just
extraordinary.
Happened. It just happened.
Like
to
they're
me.
Good. Mm-hmm. They're doing good stuff and they are able to do good stuff. And it just happened, right? That's good.
Mm-hmm. I think, you mentioned earlier before the recording was you got rejected several times before you were able to land to Vietnam, right?
How was it? Very funny experience. Like, so after ISEC India, I was applying for the ISEC in the world.
And, yeah.
I was applying at some good places that I really know about. Like uh-huh. I work with Egypt. I work with Indonesia.
Uh-huh.
So I was applying.
Egypt. Okay.
And Indonesia. And I was applying for those countries. But for some reason, I got rejected there. Like the reasons maybe they had better candidates or they had local candidates or I didn't know much about the local understanding
culture.
Of some uh-huh. of the teams,
yeah.
some cities. And sometimes I didn't know a little bit about, I didn't know about the function. Like I was applying for finance and I didn't have a finance major. Yeah, so stuff like that. Like, but the good thing is that I actually applied 13 times in 13 different countries and I failed. And that actually was a kind of like a test.
Mm.
Like because.
But why did you so determined to have the position in ISEC?
Actually, at that time, like I'm in university.
Uh-huh.
I already got placed in some jobs like Infosys, Wipro, TCS.
Yeah, exactly. Like it would be so easier for you just to get a job instead. But you decided to apply and fail 13 times before you land something in ISEC. Why do you feel like this is the organization you should be in?
I think I felt a connection that I was learning more. I was getting more.
Ah.
And so I wanted to continue that. I knew that even if I get selected, the salary would be like very less. Like they just give a stipend.
Yeah.
Like $200, $300 and they give you house and accommodation. But I was more looking forward for that. The thing that I was selling to my people, like, hey, you should go abroad and have that and you will have the mindset. I never had that. I never went abroad, right?
So okay.
When you don't know your product and you're still selling it, uh-huh. that's quite sad, you know?
Yeah.
So I actually wanted to go through that.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to experience the whole ISEC values and process. And so I wanted to go abroad and work in an international team for some time, 6 months, 1 year. So it was a 1 year duration. And so I wanted to go through that, learn. And as I said, that it's kind of a bubble and you know that you have not reached the top of the ladder in that bubble. So you really want to go there.
Uh-huh.
So I applied for director for other countries and I became director for Vietnam. So my leader, president, invited me and that was a good experience. We had 7 different countries, nationalities in the team and we were in Vietnam 7 years ago. And that was a good learning experience, you know. So many challenges, so many failures also during the term. And we reached our goal and we got recognized by 110 countries in the national plenary. So all of those are like good experiences.
Were you the founding members for ISEC Vietnam?
Oh, no, of course not. Like I was like here 7 years later. So founding members were like 7 years before me. So like 2007 or 2008, right?
Mm.
But the numbers and the legacy continues. You need to keep on increasing that. And we had challenges at that time. The registration and everything, registration of the company with the government and other things, we had to handle that. And it was quite good things to learn.
Yeah.
Actually made a lot of network. I still have a lot of people from that network now. And they are doing good jobs. And some of them joined my company as well, some way or the other. So, I mean, like, that network expanded and that helps a lot today. I mean, like, if you have young audiences who are in university, I would recommend them if they have ISEC there, join it and try. Of course, you speak English. It's a whole English organization and every event is in English. So you get to learn English, you get to meet foreigners and you get to, you know, like exchange ideas and culture. That's enough already.
Yeah.
Like for if you don't get anything else, you still get that.
Yeah.
Right. So should try.
So, so you've been spending 5 years in Hosing already, and it's been quite journey, right? You from someone who basically in a tech or engineer background, and then now you are also involved in the business and stuff too. Like, and also I think a lot of learning and skill and business you learn from Isaac is what contributed into what makes you who you are right now. Then my question is, how have you ever experienced any kind of hard decisions or like kind of ruthless decision that you have to do during your work?
I think there's moments where you have to make tough decisions, and I think mostly the tough decisions are people decisions, because it affects people, like maybe it's the staff, maybe it's the core team member and stuff.
Yeah.
And in business, sometimes you have to take that for the benefit of those people and benefit of the business as well. Mm. And I think we lost some very good people sometimes. And sometimes we had challenges and scams and stuff like that. And we had to, you know, like make tough decisions. And I think for me and my co-founder, both we had tough times. Uh-huh. I think that bond us more, that made us more stronger.
Yeah.
But we did have
any particular case where you have to, even though it breaks your heart, but you have still have to do it?
I think that we had to let go of some good people during Corona as well, and it just had to happen. It's not their fault, and it's not that.
How do you feel about it?
Quite sad. Like, again, you know, I think it's better for those people and better for the company as well at that time.
And how
I think react? They took it. I met them, and they took it in a positive way, and they took a good next step. And they're doing good, and they took those experiences in Huzing. I always encourage them to take good things. Don't take the bad things, and don't take the endings as the full journey issue. Because things are not always in your control. Not in my control, not in their control, right? And so you cannot be sad about that. And so people moved on, and they're still doing good, and all the people that left the company so far, and we had to make tough decisions, they are actually doing good in whatever sector they went into. Their experience with tech, their experience with mindset, and their experience with how to perform and be efficient, it lets them not be satisfied with less, you know. Real estate agents don't feel like real estate agents anymore. They feel like more
family members.
Family member for us, but as a professional in the market, they feel professional. They feel like the work I do is relevant for this society, for this industry.
Yeah.
And so they can portray it better, right?
More confidence for themselves as well.
Yeah. Actually, they even don't need to stick with real estate. They can even make... They are actually one of the person now. He's making system products for another company, right? And it's good. Like, I don't feel bad about that. I don't feel that someone's making similar. It's okay. That's the learning curve, and that's the point where teams grow and competitions evolve, right? So tough decisions, but then it ends up as a positive experience.
I remember you said that. I remember Huzing also used attended Shark Tank. I think it's last year, right?
2 years ago.
Oh, 2 years ago.
Yeah, 2018.
And then you actually declined the offer.
Yeah.
And can you tell me more about the experience, about the preparing for it, pitching, and then like actually get the deal, and then you know finally just reject it?
Yeah, Shark Tank was a good experience. Actually, me and Hai did not plan. At that time, Shark Tank was not there. This was the first shooting, you know, like so we were one of the first startups. And after that, Shark Tank got released, right?
Yeah.
So we planned to go on Shark Tank, and we were doing the pros and cons, like should we go, should we not go, how much time will it take, how much we have to present, what ideas to tell, what ideas not to tell, and what could be the consequences, like what if it goes wrong, what if it goes good, because Shark Tank in the US we have seen and how it affects people, right?
Yeah.
And we were also thinking about like legally what are the things we need to solve in our company before we go public and stuff like that, right? So we did a lot of pros and cons, and we saw that it will help us raise money. It will help us prepare for the next steps. We are very early stage. We have just done some deals and we have some plans. So let's go and talk. And we wanted some sharks to join us, and we really wanted to pitch to them.
Yeah.
So so we went there, and I think they only showed 10 minutes, but yeah. Actually it's like more than a 1 hour pitch. You
wow.
know? Yeah. Okay. So there many back and forth actually happened, and I didn't go to the front because they wanted one founder to be there and I could be at the back consult if needed. And
but then eventually you came out as well.
Once, right? Uh-huh. But actually, maybe in the real time, maybe I came out more. And actually, we had more consultations. We had more time to consult. Because, again, these decisions are not so easy, right? So you need to think carefully. And in the video, it looks like, okay, yeah, we said no. But actually, we try to
negotiate
and we tell. And then in the end, we decide. I think at that time we didn't want we were thinking that we still need to raise a lot of rounds in the future, and so giving away a lot of stake at the beginning maybe it's too much, and we wanted more sharks to enter, not only one shark. So when we did not have them, then we could not make a decision at that time, but we decided, but I think all the sharks over there who were there, they still support us. Like Shaklin is there, Shark Hong is there. Everyone, they still talk to me, talk to Hai, and they're so welcoming. They're so nice. I think Shark Tank was one of the good things that happened to Huzing. After that, if anyone sees me or sees Hai, they always like, I saw you on Shark Tank.
Uh-huh.
People still come to interviews and apply for Huzing because they trust the brand when they search and see Shark Tank and see the vision of the founder and see the comments of the sharks. And so I'm really grateful to what the Shark Tank platform provides people. Mm-hmm. I would recommend every startup to go there.
Yeah,
it's good pitching. They grill you, but that's the grill you need to be prepared for the market.
Yeah.
And second is like all those marketing promotions will help you. If positive, negative, you take it with a grain of salt, move ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that no was a little bit...
How do you feel about that now? Like, was it like, do you think about it again? And you feel like you should change it?
I think no. Mm. We did okay, and the offer was okay. And I think that decision helped us to make better decisions later.
Yeah.
So it's okay. I think I never regret anything that we have done in the past, because that's the stepping stone, and that's the fact that happened. But for me, it's very positive actually. As I said,
how did they react to the no? Because so when Huzing episode was out, I was watching it, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of them was like, so it's good Huzing didn't take the offer because the stake was a lot and it feels like they trying to acquire you immediately and stuff.
You mean like who, how did they...
The social media, people talking.
Social media was 50-50.
Yeah.
And so that was a very good one.
Yeah.
Because if it's like one way or they should have taken, then it's difficult. That is a... You know, like it's become like a pressure.
Yeah.
And they should have not taken. It also become a pressure on the shark, you know?
Yes.
But because it was 50-50... it was quite good. It was quite good to follow the conversation. It was 2 months of, you know, like conversation following and YouTube and everywhere we see people talking and reshare and stuff like that. And that's very good because that gives the people the question. I think the good thing about Shark Tank, they did that, is that they leave the people with an open-ended question. Any movie you see with an open-ended question, like Inception, did the top fall down or did the top stand? You know, like when you leave the audience with an open-ended, how much money I'm getting now, how much I am getting from the experience of the people, will I get this chance ever in the future? All of these questions, answer is difficult. Maybe answer is no also, right? And you bet, right? So it's kind of in that process, you are making your mind.
Mm.
And in that process, you are making a determination that if I say no, I would have to work harder and I would have to get a better deal or more support in the future for sure, and maybe I will not get this deal ever in the future.
Yeah.
Are you sure? Right? And it's a tough call. Actually, me and I somehow we discuss, and in the end, will we be happy when we go back home? Will our team be happy when we go back home?
Yeah.
Answer was no. So, okay.
I see.
We were not, right? So, easy. You ask yourself, you ask whether you or the team will feel good about this.
Yeah.
Maybe no. But you have to work hard to justify that no.
Yeah.
If not, then actually fail.
Yes.
You know? So, in the end, I think like... I have so many friends who went to Shark Tank, and all of them, I think share the same sentiment as well.
Yeah.
Yes or no, a different story. But the decision-making process in front of the camera, in front of the people, in front of the public is kind of a refining process of you.
Yeah.
It makes you more determined. It makes you more stronger. And that's why it's called a shark tank.
Mm-hmm.
It's not called a goldfish tank or something, you know.
Yeah.
You are going through tough decisions.
Yeah.
And these people are trying to take a catch.
Yeah.
But you are the one who is deciding.
Yeah.
And so how do you survive?
Right? Yeah. How do you live with your decisions at the moment?
Yeah. And I think overall, as I said, the sharks are very good and we're still in contact. Like some of them are supporting us. Some of them are our customers. And I think overall they have been so loving, so caring. Chilin has been like interviewing with us and talking about our service and support us. And I mean, like the whole community is so nice. Even after Shark Tank, the anchor, the producer, all of them are my friends now.
That's great.
And that's good. I mean, like it's good to follow them. It's good to learn from them. But that was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
In 2 years, we have got a lot of benefit from this. And
would you still saying that going Shark Tank, you already said that going to Shark Tank was a good decision, but saying no to Shark Tank, rejected offer, is still a good decision for Zing until now, after 2 years.
It's okay. I think we don't regret anything.
Yeah.
So far, like, as I said, like, tough decisions are part of it. And... what we are today is because of the choices we made in the past, and we stand by those choices.
Yeah.
If today someone asks like Huzing is here, Huzing had this many people, Huzing had this many customers, it's all these choices that we made in the past.
Yeah.
So I stand by it and proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
Really proud of it. And rarely I have things that I regret, so everything's good.
Yeah,
I
think so. That's absolutely awesome.
I think life should be like that, because regret is like, that means you're doubtful of your decision, you're doubtful of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
How can you live with that?
A lot of people look back in the back and then
they will be crying and they will be like thinking, I would have this much money, I would have this much this. You would have won the lottery if you.
But that's why your problem solving approach came in handy, because whatever problems come up because of your decision, you just solve it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that's the way we need to move. People say that people who go with the flow are dead fish. Only the living fish go across the flow. You know, like people don't talk about the dead fish before it was living, and it was also going across the and then something hit it or somehow it died and then it go. So people don't talk about that fact.
Yeah.
You know, but being a fish is important. Being a log, like a wooden log, and just going with the flow is bad.
Yeah,
but dead fish or living fish, you are still the fish.
Mm.
So until you are living, just keep on
doing swimming. That.
And keep fighting and solving problem, and one day you will die, and one day you will also go with the flow.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. Mm-hmm. Why you need to care about the flow? But don't be a log. If you're a log, that when you're living and still going with the flow, then that's a little bit kind of sad.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that, and I think that would wrap up our episode perfectly. So if people want to reach out to Huzing and they reach out to you, where can they find you?
They can contact me on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn.
Can you spell out your name or your
My name is Akshay, Akshay, People call me Aske, which is incorrect, but you can call me Akshay, and you can find me on LinkedIn, and you can search Akshay Sharma, and
Hoozing is Hoozing.
Yeah, Hoozing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hit
me up.
Yeah, and then people who want to understand more about real estate in Vietnam, or just talk about like problem solving, and if they want to, you know, try to poach you for other style, then they can do it too.
I'm really interested in tech, really interested in upcoming technologies, making a dent in industries. You know, like real estate is a tough traditional one, but any other industry, you were mentioning about shipping.
Yeah.
Anywhere where we want to talk more about what are the possibilities, mm-hmm. like I'm good to have a conversation with. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, come show Ashish some love. Tell him what you thought about the episode. Also, like, tell, you know, if you want to hit him up for all the above and more, then just, yeah, come to on get on his LinkedIn on Ashay Sharma at Hoozing, Hoozing. And also tell us what you think about the episodes. We're on social media, on YouTube, all the audio channels, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Instagram, LinkedIn, nice. All of that. So let us know what you thought. All our handles are Vietnam Rising Podcast. And thank you for tuning in. See you at the next episode.